I don't try to box myself in. The world will try to box me in. But what I know to be true is that my story knows no confines. I can tell my story through different mediums and do well effectively. Then there's the coaching pillar, which is my two different coaching programs, which is Living Purposely, which is for people who are trying to navigate career transitions and trying to decide whether entrepreneurship is the right path for them, or those who are aspiring and emerging speakers.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce a genuinely remarkable guest, Mark Travis Rivera, a creative force who lives and breathes the power of storytelling. Mark is an award-winning creative entrepreneur and the chief executive officer and the founder of The Professional Storyteller, where he uses storytelling to foster inclusion and create a better world. As a prolific writer, his bylines include The Bergen Report, The Huffington Post, The Star Ledger, and many more. His published works include his debut collection, Drafts, and the Perfect Collection of Rock, and contributions to anthologies like Crisis and Care, Queer Activist Responses to a Global Pandemic. Mark's passion for dance and disability advocacy led him to found the Mark Dance Project. At just 17 years old, became the youngest person in the United States to lead an integrated dance company. He has broken barriers through his choreography, becoming the first physically disabled Latinx choreographer selected for Ballet Hispanico's prestigious Instituto Coreográfico program. Beyond his creative work, Mark is a sought-after speaker and diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant. He has spoken at institutions like Harvard, MIT, and NYU, and his impactful TED Talk, Embracing Yourself and Embracing Your Potential, has inspired audiences worldwide. Mark's dedication to advocacy has earned him numerous accolades, including the Audre Lorde Award for Social Justice and the Lavender Legacy Award. A proud Puerto Rican queer man, a first-generation college graduate, and a trailblazer in his field, Mark's work bridges gaps between dance, disability, and storytelling, creating ripples of change across communities. Today, he continues impacting lives from his Atlanta, Georgia home. So please join me in welcoming the incredible Mark Travis Rivera to the Innovation Insights podcast. Mark, it is an honor to have you here with us today.
All right, Dr. Yolanda, thank you so much for having me. It is such a privilege to exist in your orbit and to be a guest today.
You're so kind. You're so kind. Oh, it's just been a delight. We connected via LinkedIn. And so for our audience, this is really an example of networking and on LinkedIn and how you can meet really amazing people. And it's just been a joy. I think, you know, we've been connected probably maybe a month or so.
Yeah.
And I've just been engaged with what you are doing.
So. Thank you so much.
First, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're in Atlanta, much warmer than Ames, Iowa.
I am. I always say I'm a Jersey boy through and through. I was raised in Jersey, North Jersey. So Jersey might come out a little bit at this time of the day because it's a little later in the evening for me than I normally do recordings. But I'm based in Atlanta, Georgia now. Previously, I was in the Bay Area. And prior to that, I was in New York City, which is where I moved shortly after college, where I started my career in higher ed. And yeah, I never thought I would live in the South as a queer, visibly queer adult. But Atlanta feels like home and it feels nice. And I love being surrounded by so much brilliance and queerness, Blackness, and artistic expression. And there's something about Atlanta. People have its strong reactions to the word Atlanta when they say, I live in Atlanta. But I really love Atlanta, and it only reinforces what I always have known, that Black people, when given the space to thrive, will thrive. And the amount of community I've met here, of people who are just doing some amazing things, has been so heartwarming and empowering. And I just love this city.
Well, it is a fantastic city. I love Atlanta too. And if I was going to live in the South, that would be a place.
Here, I don't leave the perimeter. So at least not by myself. So I stay within the perimeter of Atlanta because I'm still in Georgia. Okay, let's not get twisted. Atlanta is very blue, but that's within the perimeter. I don't leave outside the perimeter because it's just not necessarily safe for someone like me who is visibly queer and different. It's still Georgia, but I'm happy in Atlanta.
Well, I think that's very smart.
Yes.
Very smart. Let's start with the dance part of your story. You have a multifaceted story, but let's start with the dance project.
Mark Dance Project, which was originally called Hand Cap Dance, and it was spelled H-A-N-D hyphen cap. And it was the first time I ever got hate mail for something I was doing publicly. And I got this nasty anonymous email from this person. And mind you, I'm only like 17 years old, right? So I was not expecting this. And they're like, how dare you try to profit off of disability and use the word handicap and blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, first of all, I'm disabled. And at the time, I never thought of handicap as a negative thing. It was a common word used. He has a handicap or he's handicapped, but I've been called that my entire life. And eventually we rebranded when I went to university and made the dance company a student organization in order to get funding, which is what allowed us to grow at William Patterson University of New Jersey. And so we went through a rebrand. So it became Marked, M-A-R-K-E-D, Dance Project. And I did it for 10 years of my life. And it was the most difficult thing and the most rewarding thing any young person could have endeavored to do. And when you are a disabled person who grew up in your city below the poverty threshold with a single mother, you're not expected to go on to become a choreographer, right? Like, the career I have today, my mom still doesn't fully understand. And she's seen me speak. She's been to my dance concerts. She's seen me do some incredible things with my book. And she still can't wrap her mind around the fact that her son gets to travel the world being a speaker, choreographer, and a coach, and a consultant, and a writer, aka a storyteller. And it's laughable to me because in many ways, my life shouldn't exist. My mom gave birth to me at 5.5 months, so I weighed 1 pound. I'm not going to tell you how much I weigh now, because it's a lot more than 1 pound. But in 1991, she gave birth to her only son, the youngest of two kids, and I developed a condition known as cerebral palsy, which affects me mostly from the hips down. And growing up, it was very apparent that I had a disability. And my mother, bless her heart, she was 22 years old when she had me, and I can't even imagine being a parent at 33, let alone 22. And so I just don't know how she had the foresight to make sure that I got the physical therapies and the orthopedic shoes and the special medical treatment I needed and the care I needed throughout my younger life to be able to gain mobility and independence. But she did. So I bless her for that. And so I went to Performing Arts High School for creative writing, communication arts, and named after Rosa Belle Parks in Patterson, New Jersey, and I began my dance training there. I met my dance mentor, my first dance teacher, Erin Pride Pompa. Now she's married, so she goes by Erin Pompa. But she was an alumni of the dance program, the second dance teacher ever to teach in that program since her teacher retired. And I was her first disabled student. And she was like, I don't know. I've never worked with a disabled person before. Well, I have a brother who was disabled and I want to work with you and I think you have what it takes. And she took me under her wing and then eventually I became a dance minor and did some formal training as a dance minor, becoming the first dance minor to ever choreograph the student choreograph show. And my piece was chosen to open up the show, which back then was scandalous. The dance majors were not very happy about that. But I always tell people, I always was a writer. I was the kid who had to sit out of gym class and felt alone and isolated. And I found refuge in the world I would create in the writings of my pages in my journal. And so I would have those black and white marble journals, and I would write poetry and song lyrics when I thought I knew how to sing. And then I realized I couldn't sing, so it just became poetry. And then I started writing short essays and then short stories. And I fell in love early on with reading the Harry Potter series in the third grade. And I just knew that one way or another, I've had this same dream since I was a child, to graduate high school, graduate college, be the first one in my family to do both of those things, and be a writer. And I've accomplished that, right? And so I think of dance as a form of storytelling that happens, that can happen with some words, but typically non-verbally, right? And I created a dance company that would give disabled people the opportunity to learn how to dance. And I worked with some amazing people of all different types of disabilities. And to this day, it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done with my life, to bet on myself. I remember the first time I got paid to do a performance. My sister had hired my company to do a daytime performance for her adult daycare center. And their budgets were tight, of course. And I remember we got a $50 check. And I remember my former best friend / founding company dancer, her mom took us, and me and my other best friends were in the car, and we all performed. And I was like, Wendy's on me. We're all getting trophies. And it was the first time that as a young person, I had earned a living doing something that was aligned to my purpose. It wasn't from a McDonald's job. It wasn't from working at Ben and Jerry's. It was, I got paid to do what God had created me to do. And that set the bar high at 17 for me.
I bet it did. That being validated with for your passion, which is amazing. I do want to ask you a question as a writer and a storyteller. Do you still write in a journal?
Yes. Every morning, I have this, what I call my gratitude journal, which I started doing in the height of the pandemic in 2020. So I have a couple of these now since then. And I write down three things I'm grateful for every day to start off my day. I think I skipped today, but let me see what I wrote. I skipped today because I was so tired from yesterday working all day. Oh, I put, I'm grateful for, yes, this was from yesterday, a new week, an opportunity to grow, and the sun. And Oprah taught me this practice of gratitude. And Oprah is the main reason why I have aspirations of becoming a daytime talk show host and why I do the work that I do. But I remember her saying, write down what you're grateful for every day, because it's hard to be grateful and anxious at the same time. And you can't have joy without gratitude, right? Those two things are linked. And on my lowest days, at the end of a hard day, I looked back at this journal and I remember what I wrote. And I remind myself, tomorrow's a new day. And so, yeah, I very much still write in journals. I'm still very much a tactile writer.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And the gratitude is so important for us to be grateful. And it does help us get through so many days and instances and the future.
Yeah.
And I just have this theory that creatives and innovators, that process of writing in journals, and I know so many people that really, truly are innovative and they're getting their thoughts down. And you can do it on the computer, but that process of having a physical journal to write in or to sketch in or to doodle in just really does help the brain.
Yes, absolutely. And it's weird because I'm a millennial, but I consider myself part of the hybrid millennial group, which was where we still knew what it meant to play outside and get your ass home before the streetlights come on or else. But we're starting to learn how to type on a computer, like the old school bubble Mac laptop PCs, right? And I knew what it was like to use a CD player, but I also learned how to download LimeWire and how to use AOL chat. I knew how to write in cursive. And so I was part of that hybrid where I was just like, we were the first generation growing up as teenagers or young teens with social media coming. And then the digital boom happened. And now I think no one born after a certain year, I think, even knows how to write cursive these days. But I find a lot of joy in writing. And when I was in college studying women's and gender studies, chair of my department, Dr. Arlene Scala, who is one of my mentors, and I credit her a lot for my confidence as a scholar, she made us read a book called The Art of Journaling. And she would write journals. And these have to be type printed for her, but she was like, every day I want you to get a physical journal and just start to free write. And she got her doctorate in education from Columbia's Teachers College. She was super brilliant. And she would give line by line edits of every student's paper. And I'm like, one, how do you have that much time? And two, bless your heart, because I can never imagine giving that much detailed feedback to every single student for every single paper they ever wrote. But she made me a stronger writer, and she made me fall back in love with journaling. And I remember at the height of the pandemic, when everything was going digital, I was getting all this fatigue of always being on the screen, always looking at my phone, always being on my app for connection. And I was like, I need to do something that's not technology induced, right? What's something that I can do that doesn't require me to look at a screen at all? Pull out a journal and start writing. And that's what I did. And it was, in many ways, it continues to save me. Writing saved me when I was a child and feeling isolated and alone. And it continues to save me now as a young adult who is 33 years old, trying to navigate what it means to be an entrepreneur, an innovator, and a gay man in Atlanta.
Well,
yeah.
Well, you wear a lot of hats and you have a lot that is going on. How do you balance all of these roles?
You know what? 2 years ago, and so in 2020, right before the pandemic, God had put on my heart to go full-time entrepreneur. And I was like, I'm living in the Bay Area, the most expensive area of the country. You want me to leave a very secure and stable, not well-paid, but stable enough job? You want me to do what? To do what? And the pandemic happened, but thank God I'd listened to thank God I'm stubborn. But what I thought was God telling me to do something in the moment was simply God trying to prepare me to make moves that I only did because I felt called to become a full-time entrepreneur. And he knew that it would take a while with me because I'm stubborn. And so it was little nudges along the way. And then it got to a point where he was tired of me being stubborn and just said, 3 years is a long time to be patient, Mark. I need you to do this. And so he made my professional life so uncomfortable between 2020 and 2022 that by 2023, I was ready to go. I was ready to take the leap. And it is the one decision I made in my life that brought me closer to my faith than anything ever before. And it made me realize that I can be a man of faith and a man who fears, but it can't be both at the same time. Because the very nature of faith is to take the leap, even when you can't see the other side, the landing, right? You don't know where you're landing to. You just know that there's some ground that's going to meet your feet when you get there. And that is the very nature of faith, right? And as someone who grew up in the church, as someone who aspired at a younger age to be a youth pastor, because growing up in church, all the cool folks in church were the youth pastors. Those were the ones that had swag, that knew how to dress, that knew all the pop culture references, but also can reference the Bible and be prolific, right? And so I always wanted to be that. And then obviously I realized I was queer, experienced a lot of religious trauma because of my queerness. And I walked away from my church life and my faith in many ways in my 20s. And that decision to go full-time entrepreneur, to develop a business that was designed with my neurodivergent multi-hyphenate self in mind, has allowed me to reconnect my faith in a really intentional way. And so how I do it all is that I don't do all five pillars in one day, right? But all five of those pillars are within the business, the through line of storytelling, because my mission is to embrace the power of story to create a more inclusive world. I do that choreography, coaching, consulting, speaking, and writing, right? Where some days when I'm bouncing between consultant and coach and speaker, like today and yesterday, in June of last year, I was doing 4 out of 5 of those things in 1 week because I was doing a tech for a new dance work premiere while coaching sessions, consulting sessions, while doing client work. So it was a lot and it's hard. But what I know to be true, and Oprah helped me realize this, because she asked one time, she said, how will you honor the calling of your life? And it started when I started Mark Dance Project. So I was 17 years old when I started my dance company and I quit McDonald's. I made a promise to myself. Again, to be young and naive is so sweet sometimes because you don't really know what the hell you're thinking until you try to live it out your life. But I said to myself, when I got that first paycheck, I will never work another job again that's not aligned with my purpose. Be young and dumb. But to be fair, I stay true to that. So when I was doing work for other people, it aligned in some way with my purpose, right? I was doing communication, storytelling. I was working for a dance company that worked with disabled people as well. I was doing coaching, right? I was speaking already on the side. I was writing on the side. And so I was doing all the things while working a 9-to-5. And the only thing that has changed since then and now is I don't get paid every 2 weeks, which is the hardest part of entrepreneurship. But it is the ability to be a multifaceted artist and creative that drives me. And I think what happens with people who are multi-hyphenates or people who are neurodivergent and multi-hyphenates especially is that the 9-to-5 structure was never designed for someone who's a hyphenate. Because you're often conditioned to just stick in your lane, stay in your lane, stay in your role. Don't do too much. Don't venture out too much. Don't make a brand for yourself that's bigger than the brand of the companies and all these other things, right? And so, and I've had people that they were scared to hire me because they thought I had too much of a brand on LinkedIn. And I'm just like, no, you were scared to hire me because you guys are freaking anti-Black and racist and so-called white progressive women who are Democratic leaning, but you're still a white woman who is trying to gatekeep. And so all that to be said, I just every day I wake up doing what I love. And on the days when it's hard, on the days when, hello, girl, I don't know what I'm going to do, the universe provides. An unexpected booking happens. I get a new coaching client out of nowhere, or the client that took 3 months to pay me finally pays me, right? And it's definitely been a learning curve as a first generation high school, college graduate, and a creative entrepreneur about how to manage your own business because they don't teach us these things, right? I had to learn a lot over the last 2 years the hard way and with the support of my network, my business coach, my financial consultant, and my community and my network. And I'm so thankful. Every year I pick a word. The year of 2023 with the year I went full time, the word for that year was me. In the year of me, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And I went full time entrepreneur. And I always told people that year, there would be no year of me without the we. I may go into a room as one person, but I am surrounded both by ancestors and those in my community who anchor me, who have uplifted the bottom of the barrel to the top of where I stand because they believed in my calling. They believed in me. And I'm not perfect. I'm imperfect. We're all imperfect. We're all messy humans. And what I know to be true, and I spoke about this with my psychiatrist once. I said, is it weird that I think, because I always suffered from suicide ideation, trigger warning for those who are listening. I'm about to mention something about mental health and suicide ideation. Growing up as a disabled child, because I was often bullied and felt isolated, and led to a lot of emotion. That led to feelings of sadness and depression. And I often suffered from suicide ideation since middle school, all the way through now. And I knew it was time to go full-time entrepreneur when my mental health was getting so bad, I couldn't get out of bed. Because my spirit was yearning to do something unconventional, different, and that's something that truly honored who I was in my fullness. And I remember the first year of entrepreneurship, no matter how difficult that year was, because year one was hard, year two was harder, but year one was hard. And I remember sitting with my psychiatrist one day, and I was like, is it weird that I think it's weird that I haven't had suicidal ideation in like several months? Because it went from being very pervasive to once in a blue moon, once I started working for myself full time. And while my stress level dramatically increased and my financial stability increased, my mental health improved. It was a trippy thing. And right, and that's great. That's what drives me, Dr. Yolanda, just doing everything I love and just being really grounded in who I am.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, because I feel that there's a lot of people that have those feelings, have those thoughts, have those experiences. And it's so great that you had help, you had support, but you also you know your core purpose and you've known it for a long time. And
the funny thing is, I thought everyone did.
Yeah, no.
And as I got older, I start to realize, especially when I was talking, looking at my friends, they're like, I don't know what I'm going to do after high school. I don't know what I'm going to do after college. And I'm like, huh? I've been saying the same thing consistently since my middle school yearbook. Right? I had 2 yearbooks before I got to college that said exactly what it was that I would become. And while I never thought dance would be part of my life, I don't see dance as a diversion. I see it as an expansion of my storytelling. And so while the how I do has evolved over the years, why I do it and what I do, right? Why I do it has never shifted. Yeah. What I do and how I do has shifted, but why I do it has never shifted.
And that was
No, because that is such a privilege. And I didn't realize that until much later in life. And that's why I created my Living Purposely program, because I realized there were so many people who knew what they wanted to do. They just didn't have the tools or the courage or the self-esteem to take that leap. And so I help people navigate that doing my coaching programs. And yeah, it's so important, right? Because it's when given the tools and the guidance and support to live in your purpose, when you are honoring the calling of your life, I honestly think the world would be a better place if people were doing things that actually made them happy and not just paid the bills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Thank you. I feel like I'm at church here. This is fabulous. Oh, yeah. And your purpose really, you know, again, knowing that so young and then being a first generation, sorry if I can speak, a first generation college graduate. How did that shape your determination to succeed and get through college? Because college is hard. It is hard.
Oh, don't make me cry. I live in Miss Yolanda. I'm living in the South too long. Dr. Yolanda, don't make me cry.
I'm sorry.
I don't know why that question triggered something in me that I didn't realize it was going to come up tonight. So I don't apologize for getting emotional because I don't think that's a weakness or a deterrent, but I was not the best high school student, which I forgot to mention that. When I was really good at my arts classes. I was getting A's in dance and creative writing and English and social studies. I was getting like A, B, C's. Ironically, I failed my public speaking course, and that was because the teacher hated me, like her, but I would go on to have a very successful career in public speaking. I wasn't the greatest student when it came to math or science or... And gym was the rare thing that I would be pretty decent at outside of my creative arts sector. And I remember graduating high school like a 2.0. And my options to going to college were very limited. And there was no one in my family who had gone through that process. And I was on a limb. And I had one of the college counselors come to my high school one day, convinced me to apply for the Education Opportunity Fund, which is a program for low-income students who are often people of color or the first people in their family to go to college. And the director at the time, who's now the executive director, but the director at the time, Carmen Ortiz, wasn't sure about me because my grades were low. My GPA wasn't high. She saw my SAT scores. And she's like, no, I don't know about this guy. She goes through every applicant's folder. And then at the time, they called their secretaries, but her receptionist or her assistant, which later they would be called office admin staff or support staff, Betty, who's an older woman, bless her. She kept saying, Carmen, I know his guidance counselor. She speaks very highly of him. You have to at least meet him. And she would not stop persisting. And Miss Betty was always a persistent. She, you gotta do this. And I remember Carmen saying, okay, Betty, I'll meet with him, schedule a meeting. And I remember that day, like it was yesterday. It was unseasonably warm spring day or springish day. And I was wearing the nicest piece of clothing I had in my closet, which was like a heavy sweater and some slacks and some shoes. And I remember driving up to William Patterson, which at the time was only like a 10, 15 minute drive from where my mom lived. And and my mom, who became a teen mom at 15, she was like, you got to do well in this interview. She's giving you a chance. You got to do good. I don't know what it means to go to college, but I know you need to go to college. And I remember meeting with her. And Carmen said, "What's your story?" My mom's name is also Carmen, so this is very fine. And Carmen Ortiz said to me, "What's your story? Your grades were yo-yoing in high school. What was going on?" And I explained to her my circumstances, and she still wasn't sure about me. So she made me come back for a second interview. And she said, "Mark, I only have 100 slots. And if I give one to you, you have to make a promise to me that you're going to make college a commitment for you. Like, you're going to commit to doing well in college. You're going to make a community and a life for yourself here. And you're going to graduate. You have to promise me that." So I promised her. I promised her that I would make William Patterson a home, that I would build community, that I would do the best work I could possibly do. And I remember leaving the EOF summer semester with a 4.0 and getting up with 3.0 for most of my college semesters, even making the dean's list one semester, while being a top student leader, while being a speaker, while working multiple part-time jobs to get me through college. And it was Betty and Carmen Ortiz who just saw something in me, who took the time to listen to my story, right? A thing that they could not see between the numerical points of my GPA and some test result scores. And those two women fundamentally shifted the trajectory of my life. And so I would have Carmen, my mom, my mother who birthed me and gave me life, and my school mom, Carmen. And each Carmen would say, "What did the other Carmen say?" And I'm like, oh, it became like two Carmens against one. It was really, and my mother, a typical single mother, she would get really jealous whenever I developed a really close relationship with motherly figures, all of my friends' mothers and things like that. But when it came to Carmen, that was the one woman, she was just like, whatever Carmen Ortiz says, I trust her. Carmen, you can kick his ass if he gets out of line, right? That was the kind of relationship they had with each other. And it went on to change my life. And so when I think about the fact that my niece is about to graduate from my university 10 years after I graduated in May of this year, when I think about, she's first in her immediate family, but she's second gen when you consider her extended family. When I saw the difference between my first day of moving in and her first day of moving in, I cried one night. I cried because this is why I broke that cycle.
Absolutely.
Clearly I'm in my feelings right now, but yes, and college wasn't easy. There were times when I didn't know how I was going to have my next meal because I only had 8 meal swipes per week. And God bless Miss Ebony in the food court hall. She would pretend to swipe my food card every once in a while. And I never asked her. She just sensed that I needed it. And I used to host a lot of events. And at the events, we would always have food because you can't have college events without food. And I would bring snacks back to my room and I would make sure I ate well that night. And that's part of the reason why I produced so many events, so I could make sure I always had some food and things. And yeah, it was a very different experience for my niece. My niece, after her first day of moving in, she's in the honors college. So she was in the fancy dorms and she had enough groceries and snacks to last her at least an hour or two more if she wasn't being a greedy person. And I remember thinking to myself, God, the day my mom dropped me off, I had 3 garbage bags of clothing, the white little fridge, mini fridge, and a microwave that my mother hustled to get for me, and my high school diploma, and a couple pictures I had. And just to see how far I've come because women of color and people just have taken the chance on me, and I've taken the time to hear my story and not judge me based on what they see on a piece of paper, it has changed the trajectory of my life and the life of my family.
Thank you for sharing that, because this also leans into my guests. If they listen to all the podcasts, they know I get up on my little soapboxes about things and I have opinions. One, the standardized tests.
Yeah.
And admittance into college, into graduate programs, undergraduate programs. I have a real beef with standardized tests because they do not tell the whole story. And I'm so thankful that you had some individuals, some women that asked the questions and then listened and then took action.
Yeah.
I am so thankful.
Me too. Me too, because my life would have been very different.
the world would be different. We wouldn't have you. And I think of so many other people that are not listened to, and they're based on these numbers on a standardized test. So I'm going to jump off my soapbox now, because it is something that for 35 years I've been pissed off. Oh, more than that, even as a young child, because I refused to take my standardized test when my mother had talked to me. Oh, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, like you said, like story.
Podcast interview. This is a rare, I'm a crybaby for sure, but I don't typically get this emotional. So this is, it's taking me for a spin. Oh, woo. But I'm loving it. I'm loving the podcast conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I just, you meet people or you learn about people and you just get a sense that they're really special gems, and coming across to you, and there are mutual connection who I still have not met in person.
Well, I have to use you guys. Dr. Asia Lyons is amazing. She's one of my she's amazing. That's how we connected.
Yeah, so that's how we connected, and she will be on the podcast. We're scheduling her. You just see the work that some people are doing in your life, you know. Let me jump in line and hear and see what can I do to support? How can I join? Right. And you're one of those. And operating and living at the intersectionality that you do as a Puerto Rican, queer, disabled man, and using storytelling to connect these. What are some words of wisdom do you have for people that struggling to tell your story?
Yeah, the one thing I would tell someone is we all have a story worth telling, right? You may not tell it to choreography. You may not tell it to a collection of poetry and essays like I did, or through stages or TEDx. I didn't do a TED talk. I did TEDx talks. So just to clarify that when you do the interview. I don't want them coming after me. I'll be walking, you know, like, he didn't give a TED talk. He gave a TEDx talk. It's still prestigious. Woo. That wasn't the word used, but I was trying to censor myself. And we all have a story worth telling. And what I've had to learn over the last almost two decades of my career, because I started young, was what parts of my story am I ready to tell? And there are parts of my story that I don't share publicly until I'm ready. And I have three filters that I want to share with your audience. One is, have I shared this with my therapist? Two, have I shared this with a list of people whose opinion of me matters? So that's a short list of people whose opinion of me I truly respect. Carmen Ortiz, my sister, right? Not so much my mother, but my sister, right? And other people, right? And so, and then the third filter I use is, if I think about sharing this publicly, or if I start to try to talk about it publicly, does it cause me to feel like a shame storm? Does it have a physiological response to the shame I'm feeling? So the answer is yes, no, I can share that part of my story. If the answer is no, yes, I can't share that part of my story yet. And to bear witness to someone's story is a very beautiful thing. And I fundamentally believe what is the biggest problem we're experiencing right now in this country, in this divided nation that we are in, known as the United States, is that we stop listening to each other's stories. We stopped talking to each other. It became an us versus factions. It became infighting and othering. And you and I, on the surface, may look like we have nothing in common. But the moment we start talking about each other's stories, we learned that we both didn't do well on standardized tests. Right? We both knew that education was an important part for social mobility. Right? We both know what it's like to be one of the few people in our classes. Right? We both know what it's like to exist at multiple intersections. And on the surface, you wouldn't know that until we start to hear each other's stories. And that's how we recognize our shared humanity. And if we start to recognize more about our shared humanity, I think so much of what's going on in the world would not be happening.
I agree. I agree.
I get really good on that. That's my soapbox moment.
Welcome. I love it. And that takes you into communication, because storytelling is a communication form. And on the other side, people need to listen.
Yeah. What makes me a great communicator is that I'm also a great listener. I also read a lot. I also write a lot. Not everything I write is publish worthy, but I make a daily habit of writing in my journal. I make a daily habit of writing down thoughts. I make a daily habit of working on my craft. Because I always say, I'm always people like the Jennifer Lopez of my friend group, right? I may not be perceived as the most talented, but baby, I'm going to stay booked, all right? I'm going to stay multi-hyphenate. I'm going to stay well-dressed. I'm going to slay. I'm going to perform for you, right? And I'm gonna build my brand and my company. Love me or hate me, you can't knock my hustle. And so I have a lot of friends who I went to perform at high school with who are very much more talented than I am, who never got to really make it because their talent is not enough. Talent may get you through the door, but it's commitment, it's craftsmanship, it's drive, it's work ethic, it's determination, it's persistence, resilience. Those are the things that keeps you going when you want to give up. Because eventually you're going to walk into a room or go for an opportunity and you're not going to be the most talented person in the room. And then you're not going to have the skill set or the ability to recoup and keep going. You're going to give up. So a lot of the bullies I did in high school, a lot of them didn't go on to pursue a career. And if they did, they haven't gotten as far as I have. And that's no shade to them. We all have our own calling. And so those of who believed in me, who are still in the industry, are doing amazing. And they were, because they're kind people, right? And so it's all, don't be mean. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Listen, yeah. Don't be mean, and support people. Yeah. And I'm really intrigued about you taking this leap. And we've had a few guests that have done that, that have left academia and have said, I am going to go out there and be an entrepreneur. And so tell us a little bit more about your entrepreneurship, your business, the projects that you're working on. I know you do coaching and consulting and,
trainings, all the things. So the through line of all that I do in each pillar is storytelling. Right? And why is storytelling the through line? Because I believe in embracing the power of story to create a more inclusive world. And how I do that and what I do to do that, to fulfill that mission, that why, is different in each pillar. So obviously in the choreography pillar, I'm teaching dance classes, I'm doing workshops, I'm doing choreography on dance companies like the Ballet Hispanico, Instituto Coreográfico that I did. I just did a piece in Miami, Florida with Karen Peterson and dancers. I just had another piece premiere in California for the Fresh Meat Festival. And so the through line of that, the choreography pillar, is that I'm working at the intersection of dance and disability, of dance and queerness, dance and people who historically have not had the same access to dance education and dance training. And I tell stories through that. And the stories I tell aren't always about being disabled or being brown or queer. Sometimes it's about love or mental health, or sometimes it's about, abstract concept, or sometimes it's a very poignant story about queerness or gender or sexuality. And I don't try to box myself in. The world will try to box me in. But what I know to be true is that my story knows no confines. I can tell my story through different mediums and do well effectively. Then there's the coaching pillar, which is my two different coaching programs, which is Living Purposely, which is for people who are trying to navigate career transitions and trying to decide whether entrepreneurship is the right path for them, or those who are aspiring and emerging speakers. I have the Storyteller Speak program, which is a curriculum I developed a couple years ago that takes what I've learned the last 12 years as a professional speaker and boils it down at a market, at a price point that's accessible to the masses. Like my lowest package is $750 for one-on-one coaching, and that's 6 one-hour sessions every 2 weeks. The average cost for individual coaching for speakers is much higher than that. And so I make it accessible because that part of the pillar's purpose isn't to generate the most income, it is to generate the most mission deliverable impact. So if my mission is to create the power of story to create a more inclusive world, my coaching programs empower people to tell their story and do so effectively in my philosophical approach to that, but then propels that mission forward beyond just me, and it becomes a ripple effect. The consulting pillar is one of my higher earning pillars, which is I do a lot of communications and marketing consulting, DEI consulting. I do a lot of trainings and leadership development facilitations for different organizations around the country. And I have a couple clients right now that I'm working with. And then I also do speaking engagements around DEI topics, leadership, mental health, disability inclusion, sexuality and gender allyship, authenticity in the workplace, intersectionality is a big topic that I get looked to speak on a lot. Shout out Kimberly Crenshaw, the legal scholar who coined that theory. You should watch her TED Talk if you haven't watched it yet. Police Brutality in Black Women. It is a must watch for all people. And then I do my writing pillar, which is sometimes I get asked to contribute to a publication or a journal. I'm working on my second collection right now called Revisions, a less collection of writing, like the subtitles would be. And so, yeah. And so that's how I talk through my business structure just now, 2 or 3 minutes, right? And so it's the surface, people are like, huh? What? How do you? But it really, because it ebbs and flows, right? And I'm also high management. Even though I'm a creative, I have really good access to my logical part of my brain. And my house may not be super organized, but my Google Calendar is, my workflow is. And so I'm super organized and meticulous when it comes to my work, because I'm neurodivergent, because I'm type A, because I'm a recovering perfectionist, whatever you want to give the reason for. And so it's exciting because every day feels different. And I'm working one client, like to this week I met with Dr. Asia. And I was so on fire with her. I was so proud of her. She's doing some amazing stuff. And she's doing amazing stuff because of her. She's doing the work. But I can see, and she has shared with me how my working with her has enabled her to have stronger and better tools to use at her disposal when doing X, Y, Z. And as someone who loves being a public speaker, as someone who loves being on stages as a performer, as an artist, I also love being behind the scenes. And people often don't think that when they look at me, when I look like a diva. But I love the fact that this week, Dr. Asia is giving 4 different speaking engagements at a major conference. And I'm like, I'm going to text you to make sure you're doing okay and I see how things are going with you. Because I always say that even after the package is over and the coaching relationship may end, you still have connection with me. I'm just, because I deeply care about my clients. I'm the kind of coach that's going to empower you and send you that voice memo of encouragement when you're feeling doubtful or challenge you when you're doing the work. Or I'm very loving and affirming, but I'm also very much about get shit done, do the work. Because unlike a 9-to-5, if you're slacking off, there's usually someone around you to pick up the slack in some way. But when you are a solo entrepreneur, when you are an entrepreneur, there ain't much folks around you to pick up the slack. It all falls on your shoulders. And so I always tell my clients, I can't guarantee that you're going to be successful as a speaker. I would never say that to you. What I can tell you is, if you use the tools I gave you, you will get booked. And if you do the price points correctly, because my price points are so much more affordable, you will recoup what you spent in coaching after just one engagement, typically.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
We will definitely make sure that all of your information is included with the podcast. You know, so I do ask every guest, how do you define innovation?
The willingness to create something out of nothing over and over again until it works.
I love that. I love that.
So that's great. Something out of nothing over and over again until it works.
That really sums up so many things that you talked about, that persistence, iteration, just pushing through, doing it, getting it done. Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And I would love to have you back again.
Yes, we'll do a future episode for sure. Thank you for opening up your space to me. I always say time is the one currency we can't get back. So I appreciate you spending some time with me today. And I really appreciate you seeing me and seeing my work and supporting it and encouraging me to keep going. Because sometimes being an entrepreneur can feel really lonely and you can feel like you're on an island by yourself. And then you meet good people like you, and it just becomes a reminder that we're all on our own islands, entrepreneurship, but we're not alone in the journey, and we just have to make the time to connect and share our stories with each other. Thank you for the opportunity to be a guest on your podcast.
Thank you for being here, and you are so inspirational to me, and now I'm like, okay, we are recording this at night, so I'm probably going to be up all night.
To our listeners, I hope you feel as motivated as I do to explore your own stories and to use them to create an impact in your communities.
If you want to learn more about Mark and his fantastic work, please visit his website and connect with him on social media. Do not forget to check out his TEDx talk and publications for even more inspiration. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, and share it with others who might benefit from Mark's insights. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, your story has the power to spark change. This is Dr. Yolanda Sanders signing off. Keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.